Good morning. It is Monday morning, February 20th. I'm Steve Cole. Carbondale police have identified two men wanted for Thursday's armed robbery of Valero Cowan Center convenience store. Arrest warrants for 19-year-old Nicholas Amaral and his cousin Benjamin Weeks, also 19, cite aggravated robbery. Carbondale police advise that the suspects are considered armed and dangerous. Around 11 p.m. Thursday, two men with hoodies drawn tight across their faces robbed two employees at gunpoint and made off with an undisclosed amount of money, according to a press release. No one was injured in the incident. Witnesses spotted the duo running towards Highway 133. You can see their pictures in the Post-Independent and the Aspen Times. At their regular meeting last week, the Carbondale Board of Trustees considered liquor and marijuana licenses, welcomed their newest member, and committed to sending a letter of intent for an initiative called Space to Create, led by Carbondale Arts. DJ Bob Schultz spoke to trustee Ben Baumfalk about their meeting here on KDNK the morning after the meeting, and here is a clip.
We swore in our new trustee, Erica Sparhawk, so we're really happy to have her on board, and we now have a full 7-member board for the first time in 6 months or so.
Congratulations to Erica.
Yeah, great to have her with us. We had a good discussion with Amy Kimberly of Carbondale Arts about the Space to Create initiative, which I understand you've been involved in as well, so...
Yeah,
you can't ask me anything about it because I'll refer the question back to you.
No, you're going to get asked about it. So what was the discussion and what were the important points about it?
The main discussion was that the town, the municipality, our town government is the only entity that can submit a grant request through the Space to Create initiative. And so she was asking for our support for that, and we gave our full support. And essentially what we're getting involved in then is a project to potentially create some affordable housing and maybe some workspace, live work arrangements, all that to be determined what it would look like to keep creatives in our town in the long run. And so that Carbondale, as Amy said a few times, doesn't become one of those towns that's, or maybe Katrina had said it, that becomes such a great place to live that a lot of the people who made it so great get priced out. It's a way to try to keep that vitality and creativity in our town.
Who are creatives?
Great question. Again, I think you know the answer, but share with the listeners out there. It's a pretty broad range. I mean, I think Amy said that something like 75% of our local businesses fall under the umbrella of the Carbondale Creative District. Everything from health and wellness businesses like True Nature Healing Arts to food and beverage services like the, you know, Roaring Fork Beer Company to the more traditional, how you'd think of creatives, things like Harmony Scott Jewelers and, you know, the artists in town that work at Saw and Brian Colley and all those sorts of things. So a really broad range of people who are considered creative industries in town.
So the town agreed to submit a letter of interest in the program. What happens then?
So we're up against probably Crested Butte and maybe the North Fork of the Gunnison, the kind of Paonia area. Although it sounds like there's some question there, it might just be two of us. So our odds are pretty good that we could get the grant, and what that would provide us is a study of the needs first, sort of a needs assessment of who are creatives, what are their housing needs, what are their income ranges, and that'll help us determine how we can meet those needs. And then going forward from there, it would provide us access to a pool of money that we could potentially use to help offset some of the cost of a development, as well as access to some developers who have a lot of experience creating spaces for artists. And so we would then, you know, it's wide open, as Amy said a lot of times as well, which is it's a very creative process. I think it's very fitting, but essentially it will embark us on a path toward really identifying what do we need to do housing wise to keep creatives in our town long term, and how can we do that. And one of the most interesting things to me that became part of that discussion was that Amy said that even in towns where they decided at some point, either they didn't get the grant or they decided that it wasn't the best fit to go forward with this program, the process and the discussion that had been fostered in the community around this need led to a good end result. So I think we were all very encouraged by that. That in other words, even if we don't get the grant, or even if this exact process doesn't work for us, we're going to have a really good community discussion about housing for creative people and artists and all that in Carbondale, and look for potential land and potential opportunities to develop something, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, a great example of that that's in existence is the Third Street Center. There was really no rational plan. I mean, we had a feasibility study that I had a hand in, and we had an idea, and that's about it.
Yeah.
And somehow pulled it off through a lot of people really trying to make some idea happen.
And now it's hard to imagine that not being there. You know, it's such a core part of, I think, kind of the heartbeat of Carbondale, the Third Street Center is. And I could imagine this being a similar process.
That was Carbondale trustee Ben Baumfock in conversation with KDNK DJ and Space to Create advocate Bob Schultz. Snowplow drivers with the Colorado Department of Transportation plow thousands of miles of highway each winter. Drivers work 12-hour shifts, and when storms hit, they work straight through holidays and weekends. To learn about what the job entails, KSJD's Austin Cope joined CDOT plow driver and maintenance worker Kevin Montgomery for patrol in the San Juan Mountains north of Dolores.
Ready? All right. Kevin, thanks so much for letting us jump in a snowplow with you.
You're welcome. Happy to do so.
When you're driving a snowplow, what are all the things you have to keep track of compared to, say, driving a car?
Well, you keeping track of the materials you're putting down and how much, where it needs to be. Your front plow's 12 foot wide and a 9 foot extension on the side, so you're taking up a lot of the roads. So just staying on the road and making sure the oncoming cars have room to pass and that you're not hitting anything with your plow. Takes a lot of concentration to do so.
How would you describe the plow that we're in right now? What kind of truck is this?
This 2013 International plow truck. It's a combo unit. You can apply sand or liquids or both at the same time. And it does have a 12-foot front plow and a 9-foot plow extension on the side.
What's one of the most challenging parts about driving a snowplow?
The most challenging is the conditions you're working in. When it's snowing hard, it's hard to see the road, see where you're going. Besides the snow falling, you have the flashing lights on the truck, which make it harder to see. And then the front plow actually kicks snow up into the windshield, so the visibility is tough. That's probably the hardest part, combined with the long hours.
What's the craziest experience you've had when you've been driving a snowplow?
I was going down the road and I thought I seen something in the snowbank next to the road moving. And I slowed down and realized it was some children playing that dug a hole into the side of the windrow with snow on the side of the road that I was pushing back, and realizing that I could have pushed that snow into them or hurt them. That was probably the most disturbing I've ever had plowing.
Geez, what happened there? What did you do when you noticed that?
I was able to slow down. I honked the horn and got stopped, and was actually able to, in an area where it was safe enough to get out of the truck and explain to them that where they was playing wasn't a safe area to be, that they should move away from the highway.
Wow, no kidding. We passed a sign earlier that said, never pass snow plows on the right. Why is that an important thing?
Several reasons not to pass a snow plow on the right. As we're plowing, all the material, the snow, any salt, sand, anything that's been fell off vehicles, pieces of metal or anything on the road, we're plowing off. And as they come off to the right, if you pass on the right, all of that snow material, anything that was on the road is going to hit your car. It could scratch your car, break a windshield, cause an accident. Or with the plow extension that sticks out the side of the truck, you could run into it. It's hard to see it with the snow coming off the truck.
Have you ever had people try to pass you on the right?
We have people pass us on the right almost daily when you get into a area where there's two lanes and we're trying to plow the inside lane.
So that does include, like, if they're even in a passing zone on the right?
Yes, even in a passing zone. Being an emergency vehicle with the flashing lights, we should have a little, should be given a little more room and to do our job, kind of like an ambulance or a police vehicle.
What's the best part of the job you do?
I think the best part of the job for me is knowing the service I provide for the public and for my family that travel the road also. Keeping the snow off the road, getting the roads clear as soon as possible, providing that safe environment for people traveling and my family that travels these roads. That's probably the most fulfilling part of my job.
Kevin Montgomery, lead worker for Colorado Department of Transportation. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Special thanks to Richard Tokar, Todd Jones, and Lisa Schwantes of CDOT for helping make this trip possible. I'm Austin Cope. Thanks for joining us.